Yes, I'm just going to bring in a bit more of the Satipatthana element of this retreat this morning. And then we're going to do an exercise around noticing pleasant, unpleasant and neutral feelings. So the Satipatthana Sutta is from the Pali Canon and is widely considered the kind of the root text on mindfulness. And the Buddha is asking us to attend with mindfulness and with a sense of purpose, a sense of application of effort, and a longing to be free from being a slave to our likes and dislikes. Those are the kind of attitudes we bring to our practice. And then we're asked to attend to our body, which we've been doing quite fully on this retreat. So we've already done the kind of body foundation quite a bit, and we're going to be doing that, of course, throughout the whole retreat. We never leave the body behind. And then we're asked to attend to what's called Vedana, which I'll talk about this morning. We're asked to attend to our mental and emotional mood, and then we're asked to attend to our mental events. And through that kind of awareness, we're able to free ourselves from the reactive mind and move towards this big, expansive, luminous awareness that I touched on the other day. So Vedana, it's variously translated. It seems like the translation that's most widely used at the moment is feeling. I've always avoided calling it feeling, but I think I'm reluctantly coming around to thinking I probably have to join the club if everyone else is calling it feeling, all the great, you know, like Bhante and Subhuti and Analio. Analio's a German monk who's done a lot of writing and practice on Satipatthana. They're all calling it feeling, so I'm going to call it feeling from now. From today onwards, I am going to call it feeling. However, I'm going to explain what I mean by that carefully. Because in the English language, feeling is a very broad word. It can be, I feel cold, I feel hungry, I feel furious. And Vedana is only referring to the feeling tone of like feeling cold, feeling warm, feeling the pressure of my bottom on the chair. Things like feeling angry, frustrated, huge desire. That's more the realm of citta in the Satipatthana Sutta because it's active. So it's something that's got a sort of karmic weight to it. Karmic weight meaning it's got volition. And a volition, a momentum, will lead to future consequences. Whereas Vedana is just a given in this moment. So it's the feeling aspect that has arrived already. Here it is, we can't do anything about it. So if I'm going to use feeling from now onwards, I am going to hyphenate it to tone. And I'm going to call it feeling tone, because I think feeling tone is more precise than feeling. And I think feeling tone is quite good, actually. And what Analio and others are stressing, which I do really agree with, is it isn't just bare sensation. It's the effective affect. Affect, I think, means... What does affect mean from a psychological point of view? Anyone know?
Facial expression.
I think it is the same as Vedana, but what is the definition of affect? Because Analia calls it affective tone. I think probably affect is like the emotional taste.
Anyway. Result of it.
Sorry?
It's the result of it.
That's what the word means, it's result, isn't it?
Result of.
Not effect, but affect. A. Sorry, Mike.
Afferent arisings are things that arrive in the body and affect... Afferent are leaving. So afferent is body to mind, and efferent is mind to body communication.
Okay, that's complicated, isn't it? Should we just stick with feeling tone? the thing I always try to do when I'm doing Satipatthana teaching is keep it really simple. We can get all caught up in concepts and all the rest of it, but actually, I think it's a very simple practice. It's being aware of what is happening in your body. What are you feeling in the sense of feeling tone? You know, what are your emotions? What are your mental events? And crucially, through this awareness, we can then create a little bit of space so we can make choices as to how we respond. So rather than tipping into automatic reactions, which is what we usually do, we're able to move towards a much more creative quality of mind. The Buddha said that the cause of all our suffering is craving and aversion. And what that means in lived experiences, we have a body, we have senses, they come into contact with the world. There's this initial arising of this is pleasant, this is unpleasant, this is neutral. Usually we're completely unaware of that, and automatically we push away the unpleasant. Sorry, Nagasini. We push away the unpleasant, we're just caught up in aversion, or we try to pull the pleasant towards us and we're caught up in craving. And we live our lives strung out between these two poles of don't want this, go away, go away, go away, I want more of that. And it's all unconscious, and from the very first moment of waking, we're doing that, until the very last moment of going to sleep, we're doing that, and then we're probably doing it in our dreams. So we are just compulsive creatures of trying to avoid the unpleasant and cling on to the pleasant. And the Buddha said that's the cause of all our suffering. And the neutral is interesting. The neutral seems to be, I think I've never really understood a neutral Vedana, but I think I'm getting a little bit clearer. I'm just going to move so people can see me. I don't like talking to you. It's awareness on my part, isn't it, to actually position myself in a way that I can actually see the people I'm talking to. Okay, good. What was I saying? Neutral. Yeah, I've never really understood neutral, because for me, as soon as I'm aware of something, it's either subtly pleasant or painful. But one of the things that Analio said in his latest book, which I think is interesting, is that this feeling tone is a bandwidth. So we've got this whole bandwidth to strongly unpleasant, to strongly pleasant, subtly unpleasant, subtly pleasant. And then in the middle, there's this bit that you don't quite know what it is. But the tendon to neutral means we get away from this kind of dualistic, it's pleasant or it's unpleasant, in a kind of lumpy sense. Mm-hmm. But you've just got this bandwidth of feeling tone going on all the time. And some of it's in the middle. And generally speaking, what Analia is saying, which I think is very, very, very good, it's boring. So what we do is we reach for something that's more stimulating. Mm-hmm. That might be pleasant or it might be unpleasant, because we're bored. And then that leads to ignorance. So obviously, pleasant leads to craving, unpleasant leads to aversion, and neutral leads to ignorance. And he makes the point, I think it's really good, ignorance means literally to ignore. Mm-hmm. So we're just ignoring all the stuff that's boring. Mm-hmm. And that in itself perhaps isn't that major, but what we do is we then kind of reach for something that's more diverting for us, because the mind just seeks stimulation all the time. Yeah, so what we're going to do this morning is an exercise where we can just get closer to, well, what is our Vedana? Because we've got Vedana happening all the time. All the time we've got this arising of, I like this, I don't like this, this is boring. All the time. And as I've said, if we're not aware, we're just habitually reacting. And it causes us so much distress and suffering. If we're aware, we can learn to notice it, notice the arising of it, and release that habit of contraction, either into this grabby mind or the pushing away mind. So we're going back to the theme I touched on the other day of everything's about moving towards release and openness. So Vedana will arise. This is another important point. Because we're human, we've got senses, we've got a body, Vedana will always arise. The Buddha presumably had Vedana. And a lot of it's going to be unpleasant, because we've got bodies, and bodies are the home of unpleasant sensation as well as pleasant sensation. But it's learning how to be much looser around that. And then when we do that, we can see into its impermanent nature, and that's the insight aspect, that Vedana, it's always arising and passing, it's always changing. So we can learn to rest back with this kind of fluid, open awareness, rather than this just fighting with whatever's happening at any given moment. was thinking about the imagination and Vedana, the imagination and mindfulness. Obviously, those are themes this week. I think probably mindfulness without any imagination can become very dry and boring. And the imagination without any mindfulness can become, you know, fantasy, as we've been saying. And perhaps, as Nagasiddhi said, a bit sort of overwhelming, or we can get intoxicated, or we can get lost in this amazing ability that we have as human beings to imagine. But if we haven't got any mindfulness around that, we're not going to be necessarily harnessing it in the pursuit of our overall values, our overall intention to move towards freedom. It can just become a kind of thing that we get lost in. And and the Satipatthana Sutta is obviously Pali Canon, so it's not Mahayana, so you know, the imagination isn't overtly there. You know, we're not being asked to visualize Buddhas and Bodhisattvas or to imagine Bodhicitta or anything. But the imagination is there, because at the very beginning of the Satipatthana, you've got what's called the definition verse, as I mentioned before, which is the attitudes you bring to your practice. And the attitudes are a sense of diligence, or being ardent. See, ardent is a very interesting word. Ardent is heartful, and it comes from the Pali atapi, which means fire. So we're being asked to bring this fire to our practice. Well, you have to have imagination to get any sense of what that means. Otherwise, it's just words. But I can say those words to you, and I can be fairly confident that for each of you, there's some kind of response. And that's imaginal. And then we're asked to be mindful, which means to be in the present. Sati. To remember to be present. Because as I mentioned the other day, sati is connected with the verb to remember. We're asked to be clearly comprehending, which is sampajana, which is that our mindfulness is in the service of our goal. That requires a lot of imagination. A lot of imagination to remember what our deepest values are. You know, otherwise, present moment awareness is just meaningless if it's not in the service of moving towards freedom. And I say the word freedom fairly confident that everyone in this room will have some kind of individual resonance with that word. It will be different for each of us, but broadly speaking, I say the word freedom, and I think there will be some kind of openness around that word. Your response will be one of openness, moving from being bound to being open. That's imaginal. And then the last definition is sometimes translated as free of desires and discontent in regard to the world. Or Subhuti translates it as free of being a slave to your likes and dislikes, which I really like, because we're just enslaved usually by our preferences. And again, you know, that's an imaginal thing for us to... For me, I hear that and I think, oh yes, I really, really want that. I so long to be free from being bound by my likes and dislikes. So I think the imagination is very much in these practices, even though it's not overtly there in the sense of, you know, vast cosmic dramas. It's there, just in those very simple words. Yeah, so I think we need imagination to fully engage with mindfulness, and we need mindfulness to fully engage with the imagination. And the other thing I was reflecting on this morning is we talk quite a bit on this retreat about portals and doorways. That maybe there is some kind of longing in the human psyche to pass through a doorway, which is why it's emerged in so many cultures, or bridges, these kind of transitions from one world to the next, one realm to the next, or from a mindfulness point of view, one way of perceiving to a more open way of perceiving. You could say that's a portal or a doorway. And Vedana is the portal in Satipatthana reflection. And I think Vedana, for me, it's the gateway. Because Vedana is that crucial point where you're catching that initial arising of a reaction, and you're choosing to release around that, which means you're stepping through a door to a more spacious, open, luminous awareness. Yes, I think I quite love that, Vedana as this magical doorway. And of course, the way experience actually is, you know, we don't sort of, here's my body, here's Vedana, here's an emotion, here's a thought. It's not like that. Life is just like the massive torrent, waterfall crashing down upon us of sense impressions, thoughts, emotions, me, you, other people, the world, the birds, the leaves. It's very, very multidimensional in every given moment. But I think what Satipatthana reflection is giving us is a kind of wedge. It's like we're driving a wedge into that torrent of impressions, creating a little bit of space. Here's a body. Here's an arising. I'm catching the arising of the pushing away of experience. Release. Drop back into the body. Catching the arising of, oh, I want more of that. Release. Here's a thought. Here's a fantasy. I want more. Release. So I do think that Vedana is that, it's that horizon between an open life and a reactive life and a contracted life. Yeah, do you get a sense of that? And we'll do this little exercise now to give you a more immediate sense of that. But yeah, I think that running through the Satipatthana Sutta is this idea of I'm looking for a word that isn't coming to mind. Maybe it's a thin place. Maybe it's this borderland. That's what I'm looking for. It's a borderland between a reactive, contracted life and an open, luminous life. And that borderland is mindfulness. And if you can live right on that edge, then everything opens up, and then there's the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas and love and wonder and amazement. And we don't just do it once. That's the other thing. That's the mistake we can make a little bit with things like Satipatthana practice. It can be a bit kind of, you just, you know, you have this chance now. You got a chance to be aware. Oops, I missed that. I've blown it. And your whole life's ruined. It's moment by moment by moment. It's very fluid and open. So we use the language of the gap, don't we? Quite a lot. And I think that's a great language. And it's also prone to a little bit of misunderstanding. Like you have the gap once, mind the gap. I've blown it. Oh, I'm a useless Buddhist. So I think it's more likely here's a moment of responsive awareness. I've got this chance. So, I did it. Oh dear, I've blown it. Never mind. Next moment, next moment, next moment. So even if we're completely lost in reaction, there's always that opportunity to come back to that borderland. And I'm completely lost in despair. I don't have to contract against that. Come back to the body, come back to the breath. I'm completely lost in sexual fantasy. Wake up. It's that moment of knowing what's happening. That's that moment of wakefulness. It's a moment of presence. And then you can either keep going or you can just drop back into the present moment, come back to the body. So we can never fail. That's an important thing to say. If you believe that mindfulness is that moment of waking up to whatever's going on, we've always got that choice. So even if you're in a very, very negative state, so-called negative state, as soon as you become aware of it, you've succeeded in your practice. And then we can bring tenderness and openness around that. Okay. Yes.
Is it just worth, I just noticed myself think, what's the difference between longing and craving? So at the beginning, you know, we long, there's something in the human heart about longing to pass over into another realm or live our lives differently. But actually it's craving, isn't it?
Well, it's Dharma Chandra.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a Dharma Chandra. It's a...
Yeah, well, for me, I'd always just come back to my body, and craving, as Nagasiddhi said, usually has a contracted feel about it, whereas longing can feel really open. Like if I long for freedom, there's a kind of openness. If I crave praise or appreciation. There's a kind of, you know, me. It's got a sort of bound quality to it. So I think always just look for what's happening in the body.
Is it basically the same energy?
Similar energy,
does it,
yeah.
Does it come from the same root, as it were, or?
I don't know. What do you think?
Probably is. It's probably like taking energy and sending it one way or sending it another, like you've got a river and you can send it into a lake, or you can let it dissipate into a swamp.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, we're going to be doing an exercise later this morning that I think you're right. Yeah, that's really, really helpful. And we'll do an exercise later where we'll be exploring that in our bodies, which is very interesting. You know what? Just staying with feelings of openness and getting a little taste of freedom. What happens when you stay with that without closing down around it and trying to possess it? Maybe that's it, that craving's got a possessive quality and longing's got a sort of non-dual feeling to it.
They both sort of, they both arise, don't they, in response to something that's unpleasant or not satisfying.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Which is fine, and then you've got a choice, haven't you? Do I respond to that unpleasantness or whatever it is, it might be existential or whatever, do I respond with craving or can I respond with longing?
Yeah. And it can also arise in relation to pleasant feeling. You know, you've got some sort of pleasant thing happening in the body. I think this is very interesting around the dhyanas. You get a little taste of, I'm getting somewhere here. And then as soon as you think, first dhyana, look at me, it goes.
Yeah, you're attached.
But if it's like, you just ride it without that craving mind, then it blooms into something. So we're going to be playing around with that later on this morning.